Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. I'm one of your hosts, I'm Dan Reichert. I'm sitting across the table right now from my wife, Bianca Reichert.
That's how it's done when we pan the stream.
Yep, we're sitting in these chairs
across
every time.
Across from one another.
Except for those first few episodes where we were laying on the bed with the ottoman with the one mic between us and Razor jumping around and not as great of a situation.
That was uncomfy.
Yes, we are in a much better situation now.
It's Panning the Stream, the husband and wife podcast where we discuss husband and wife things like My Hero Academia.
Yes, the most husbandly and wife thing. I think you have to be married legally to discuss this show.
Since we're on the subject, do you have any marriage advice you'd like to dole out to the people?
Marriage advice? I guess pre-marriage advice. If you're going to get married, just make sure it's to someone that you really enjoy being around all the time. And that's going to make things a lot easier for you going forward the rest of your life.
Yeah. I think the tiny things that annoy you are only going to get a lot worse.
Uh-huh.
I would say to all the husbands out there, don't murder your wives. That seems to be happening lately a lot, so.
Is it a new rash of that?
No, it's been happening all the time. Most of the time when a wife disappears, the husband's usually to blame. So.
I remember turning on the news one morning and they were interviewing that guy whose wife and I think one kid disappeared.
Wife and two young girls, and she was pregnant with another one.
That's right. And maybe I'm just a rube, but this guy was talking to the news, and he's like, I'm just heartbroken, I'm in shock and everything.
I remember we were, like, walking to the train together that morning, and you were telling me about it, and I was like, oh, it was probably him, and you were like, no, you seem pretty heartbroken over it, and sure enough, it was
him. It was super him. He's in jail now for murder. So My Hero Academia.
Yeah,
you know.
It's a great anime show.
Yeah, have we seen any straight-up murders? There's been, like, Stain tried to kill some people this season.
Mm, well, I'm sure he has the title the Hero Killer, so I'm sure he has successfully killed a number of heroes that are of no consequence, like Native.
Right, yeah, but he did not get away with killing him. Native was saved by the good folks.
So imagine how much the ones that die must suck.
Oh, yeah. Well, they don't even get shown on screen. At least Native got shown on screen with absolutely no backstory or even pre-knowledge of who this character was.
And I have the most questions about him.
Yeah, I want to know what his deal is. We got no... It's like they introduced this character in peril, and it's like, wait, are we supposed to... Did we miss an episode? I don't know who this guy is.
Well, I want to know what his deal is. Why is he dressed like a Native American if they're in Japan, in Hosu City?
I don't know. That seems like an odd quirk, or is that a design costume decision on that person's... I don't know what the origin of that
is. I feel like in today's day and age, that'd be a questionable choice.
I wonder if it would be seen as such in Japan.
Well, that's true. But why would they call it Native in Japan when it's not Native to Japan?
Maybe that was a localization thing.
Oh.
Perhaps.
Hmm.
I don't know. Well, maybe we'll never know about Native until we get the standalone movie about him, and then all of our questions will be answered.
Yeah.
But this time, we watched episodes 21 through 25 of season 2, or if you're watching on Hulu, that is episodes 34 through 38.
It's the final group of episodes for this season.
It is, it is. And I think it very nicely sets up some conflicts and intriguing story bits leading into season 3, which I have heard really good things about season 3.
Mm.
And actually, I have heard that I was shown a pretty climactic part of season 3 during my anime panel thing last summer, and luckily I don't remember any of it. I have a good idea of probably what it entails, probably a pretty big climactic battle type thing, but I don't, maybe once I see it on screen when we do next season, I'll be like, oh right, I've seen this before, but I don't remember it at all. I just remember sitting there and being shown a bunch of anime I had no context for.
Well, I'm a little upset that you were shown a climactic scene in the series that I guess they wanted to encourage you to watch it, but
yeah.
Why would they show you such a pivotal scene then?
Well, that's the thing, is I saw a comment on one of our previous My Hero episodes saying that, like, oh, I just can't believe they already ruin that scene, like that scene for Dan, like that anime thing. And I read that comment and I was just thinking, like, well, I don't think it's been ruined. I think I don't know. I don't remember what it is. So.
Yeah, you showed me that panel and I don't remember it either.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Yep. But we will wrap up season 2 here before we get to season 3. And we got some battle-heavy episodes here. We got a lot of exam-type stuff pitting students against teachers, groups of two students against a teacher. But before we do that, episode 21 starts with a kind of fun throwaway talk show bit about Do heroes need to be sexy? And it's the hot topic on the news, I guess, and they bring in Mount Lady.
It's
the
question on the tip of everyone's tongue.
Everyone. We're finally going to answer it. Mount Lady and Miss Midnight sit down to discuss it. And I don't think they really come to a conclusion. I think Mount Lady just kind of gives Miss Midnight shit for, like, being old.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much it.
Miss Midnight, I mean, granted, it is a cartoon, yes. So it's hard to tell. But she seems quite foxy. I would say even foxier than Mount Lady. So Mount Lady should maybe... you know, tone it down a little bit.
It seems like Miss Midnight's foxiness is a part of her entire quirk and persona and everything, whereas Mountain Lady is just a lady named Mountain Lady.
Yeah.
I don't really... Wait, she turns real big, but that's not inherently sexual.
Well,
I guess you could turn it... People can turn things sexual however they want.
I had a weird ex-boyfriend. We won't get into it, but...
Okay, all right. Anywho, so they show the midterm rankings in class, and we see where a lot of people land, but the important thing is Momo got first place.
Of course, she's Momo.
She's Momo. She's very, very smart. We'll get into some stuff about her confidence later, but she's no doubt got the confidence, the intellectual ability to pass the written exam and everything, what's the word? With
flying colors.
Flying colors, that's
and
it.
And she offers to host a study party at her estate, because I guess her family has an obscene amount of money.
Yes, at the great hall of her house for tea and tutoring. And as soon as she said that, it's like, oh, okay, everything's coming together with this character. Like, she was, like, highly recommended to the school, and she, okay, yes. So she came from a very privileged background. But everyone's really afraid about what the practical part of the exam is going to entail. Jesus Christ.
Well, I guess it is inhale in the case of 13 versus Uraraka.
That's what I was thinking. That's why I stumbled on that. That's right. There's rumors and stuff where people are saying, oh, I heard it's going to be students versus robots or something, but no one knows for sure. So we head to Momo's mansion, which is gated, and we get kind of a montage of studying and stuff. A lot of people are staying at her mansion. Deku is kind of at home studying over his desk. Tenya is running. It seems like there's a contingency of the students that needs the help and has not done super well with the academic stuff. And they are kind of all holing up at Momo's house to prepare.
The ones that do exceedingly well in the battles are also the ones that do well in the written exams.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is surprising. I feel like Bakugo would be the type that would like shun the academic work and really focus on the battle stuff, but he scored like fourth in the class or something.
Yeah, he's the type of villain that I like.
He's
villains
not a villain,
like this.
Dan. He's a hero.
I'm sorry. So he's the kind of anti-hero or dickhead character to be
anti-hero or dickhead character.
I went to film school. Everyone knows that. Like, he's capable. He's not just a brute. He's not just like good at fighting or blowing stuff up. He seems smart, and I mean, he's got all sorts of weird jealousy and rage stuff going on. But he's extremely smart and extremely capable with combat. But the written exam part of this just finishes without much fanfare, and they don't even really kind of address it at all. They're just like, hey, everyone did fine. Let's move on to the practical thing. And that's when Aizawa, Mr. Eraserhead, is standing there with a scarf thing, and a dog pops out of it. There's a little dog principal. He was hiding in the scarf for some reason.
Yeah, that little guy.
Nezu, Principal Nezu.
He has a real sweet little voice, and he wears a tiny suit.
He's got a little smile all the time. Mm-hmm. We learn more about him later on once he has his time to shine. But I'm glad we're filling in the backstory of Principal Nezu, the dog principal.
I gotta say, even though we'll get into it, obviously, what his quirk is, but seeing him in a principal role, given how cute he is, if this was a real-life scenario, I find it would be extremely hard to have, I don't know if this is the right way of saying it, but like acknowledge a person like that's authority, or he is a creature like that. I mean, being so cute, could you really, like, without biting your tongue, you know, submit to whatever his directions are?
I mean, did he ever have a teacher in school or something that was like very like diminutive or very sweet, but like you knew that like, oh, okay, I gotta listen to this person?
Well, there was Mrs. Martin when I was in like sixth grade, and she was doing roll call or something at the beginning of class, and she said like, is Bianca here or something? And I was like, yes, ma'am. And she thought I said, yes, man. And she screamed at me.
What?
And I got detention for it. And I didn't know what to say. I was like, that's not what I said.
Did you have a history of being like sassy troublemaker girl?
Well, I wasn't a troublemaker, but I was going through my goth phase at this time.
Oh, so
I think people were predisposed to assume that I was doing, you know, rebel type things, like calling people man.
Well, yes, that is the most rebellious thing to do, is to call an old lady a man.
Yeah.
But, boy, yeah, troublemaker.
That was in my, I think it was like current events class or something, and we had to do brochures for like other countries to, I guess, give us a reason to learn about other countries. And this kid in my class, Michael, jokingly said, I want to do Ethiopia. And I thought he was serious, and I thought Ethiopia would be a hot ticket for this project. So I was like, no, I want to do Ethiopia. So then I had to write a tourism brochure to attract people to Ethiopia, which is hard because, you know, a lot of people there are really sick, and it's a third world country, and it's not really a place you'd necessarily want to go on vacation.
Oh, and so it was basically your job to be like PR or marketing yes. for a country that doesn't get a lot of tourist traffic right now?
Yeah, those are the two things that I remember from Mrs. Martin's class.
So we have a teacher conference here, speaking of teachers, and they're all kind of sitting around talking about the plan for this whole teachers versus students thing, mm-hmm. which we learned pretty early that it's going to be Deku and Bakugo versus All Might.
Right.
So that's a Mania main event if I've ever seen one. That's...
Yeah, there's a lot of hype around that. And it seems like they're matching kids and teachers up based on their quirks, obviously, what their weaknesses are, what their strengths are. But in regards to Bakugo and Deku, they're matched up because of their relationship, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. That there are some of those where it's like, okay, these guys are going to need to learn how to work together, or these guys are going to have to come up with a creative way to do their quirks or something. But yeah, it is specifically like, okay, these guys are oil and water. They have a backstory. Like, they need to be able to like work together if they want to be All Might, you know, the number
right.
one hero. So yeah, All Might is basically put in charge of teaching them that lesson. Also, I think we get our first glimpse of Power Loader here, who is a tiny shirtless man with a weird construction claw on his head. We'll see more of him later, but yes, I had not seen him before, to my knowledge, before this scene.
I think we'd seen him maybe in the background of some scenes, but he never got a speaking role.
Yeah, this is where it's like, oh, he's a teacher, I guess. So we learn the rules. You can either capture the teacher, or you can run away, and you can
capture
escape.
By putting handcuffs on them.
Yeah, which I was confused, which we'll get into it with the first one in a second, but like, do the kids get handcuffs as well as like there's the weights, that there's like super condensed compressed weights or whatever that the teachers
get
have to wear?
Handcuffs.
Okay.
The teachers have to wear the weights.
I see. Okay. I'll circle back to that in the first fight coming up here.
Well, isn't the first fight the Cementos one?
I'm sorry, yes. Yeah, so there's one coming up I'll bring it back to. But Hatsume, the Becky Lynch character from the support course, made these ultra-compressed weights to put on the heroes to make it harder for them to move, to kind of even the playing field. I liked getting reminded of Hatsume. She seemed like a cool character. I'd like to see more of her.
Mm-hmm.
Her whole ploy to like just sell products during the sports festival was one of my favorite parts of that whole arc.
Well, I could see you liking that. That's a very wrestler thing to do.
Just shilling merch. Yeah, yeah, just selling gimmicks. So yeah, you're right. The first one is Cementos versus one of the hard boys, Kirishima, and Rikido, who... I don't remember seeing him before, but his quirk is Sugar Rush.
We've seen him, but again, I don't think he's been in the spotlight, really.
Okay, because I think we got the whole splash, like, his quirk is Sugar Rush. He does this and that, but he gets stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he eats sugar to get, like, a stat buff, but it makes him stupid. So, like,
yeah,
a hit to intelligence.
Exactly. Kind of like, what's his name? The electric guy, Kaminari.
Yeah, maybe Denki's his first name or something.
Yeah, who, if he uses his quirk too much, he gets dumb.
That's right, yeah. One of those downsides to the quirks that we see a lot of.
Yeah, so Cementos essentially inundates these guys with cement, kind of exploiting the fact that they have a limited endurance.
Mm-hmm. And they're idiots, and they're just going
and
for it.
Yeah, there's no real strategy there, and he wins pretty... handily, is that something I could say?
Yeah, he builds a weird concrete volcano in the middle of the street that only happens in the Tommy Lee Jones classic Volcano, featuring a volcano in Los Angeles. It's a great film. I don't know if you've seen it. We should watch it. It's great. So Cementos handily wins this first fight here. Next episode starts out with Birdman and Froppy in the Coliseum against a new teacher, I guess, Ectoplasm.
Yes.
Which I don't think we'd seen him before, but
looks like something straight out of the MCU.
it just falls out of your mouth like you've said it a million times.
That's me, a comics fan.
Boy, it's just, you never sound more in your element than when you're talking about comics.
But doesn't he?
I don't know enough. I know there's the big purple guy who snaps and makes the universe disappear or something. So maybe
No. You're thinking of the Avengers movies. I'm just talking
but
about
that's the MCU.
Yeah, I know, but that you're talking about a specific guy there. I'm talking just generally. He looks like he could
He would fit in
a comics guy.
The Avengers could fight this guy.
Or be, you know, band together with him to best an evil foe.
So what makes you think that he belongs more in the MCU and not the DC Comics universe?
Because he kind of looks like Venom.
Is Venom Marvel?
Is Spider-Man Marvel?
Oh yeah, Spider-Man's Marvel. But there's like a weird thing with Sony where like it's like joint custody or something between Sony and Marvel. But maybe Sony and Marvel are the same company now. I don't know how
anyway,
any of that shit works.
Ectoplasm makes clones of himself.
Yes.
And Froppy and Tokiyami are put in this kind of like really tall building structure with multiple levels. Reminds me of like a billion dungeons in many RPGs that I've played.
It reminded me of a Colosseum, especially when he made himself gigantic, like a Shadow of the Colossus boss. And there is a Shadow of the Colossus boss that takes place in a Colosseum that really reminded me of this area.
This specifically reminded me of this dungeon in Final Fantasy XII, where like it's like one of the hardest dungeons if you go back later and you have to fight this crazy boss that's like hidden at the bottom. But I forget the name of the dungeon, but it like looks almost exactly like that.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of video games have had that kind of Colosseum like battle. Like Oblivion had the battle arena and all that stuff.
Well, it looked like an arena, but it also had like a bajillion floors. Like it was a really tall tower.
Yeah. But that is the battleground for this fight here. And before he turns into the giant Shadow of the Colossus thing, there are just a billion clones. Like he barfs this mist that turns into clones, and it's like one of those boss fights where, oh, here's the real one, and he made a bunch of fake ones, and the fake ones, you slash once with their sword, and they disappear into mist, and you gotta find the real one to do damage. You've played Zelda. So, at a certain point in this fight, the Birdman starts talking to Dark Shadow, or actually vice versa. Dark Shadow starts, has its own voice and brain, apparently?
Yeah, he's demonstrated that before.
Have they? Okay, yeah. This is the first time I remember it being, like, a separate entity instead of, like, an extension of, Toriyami? Is that his name?
Tokiyami,
yeah. But I was kind of confused by the end of this because, like, Froppy did something where she swallowed. Did she swallow the weights or the cuffs?
She's not in possession of the weights. The weights are on the teachers.
That's the thing.
If she
were to
swallow them, she would be putting herself at a disadvantage because the teachers would have less weight on them. What she did was she swallowed the handcuffs.
Okay.
And then she she gave the handcuffs to Dark Shadow. When Dark Shadow went in to attack him, like, I guess right before he punched him, he, like, sneak attack, put the handcuffs on Ectoplasm.
I see.
So they won.
Okay, I got it. I think at that time I didn't know that there were handcuffs and the weights, so I was like, wait, did she take that off his legs and then put it on him? Okay, I got it. Then we got Ida and Ojiro, who is the Tail Man, against Power Loader. This is a real kind of short and sweet one. Ida kind of spins the Tail Man around, tosses him, and they do like a Devil May Cry hop on him and like surf him out of the arena or whatever. So they win that. They pass. Then we get Momo. This is kind of a big one. So Momo and Todoroki versus Eraserhead here.
Yeah, and since Todoroki and Momo went against each other in the sports festival, and Todoroki pretty handily beat Momo, and consequently she was pretty devoid of self-confidence.
Yes.
Especially in regards to Todoroki, she kind of just submitted to whatever he suggested because she, in her mind, he's a superior student.
Right.
So she should just, whatever ideas he has, she would just follow. And there's like a lot of sequences of her like just running and just like having these crippling thoughts of self-doubt plague her and stuff. And it's like, man, I could relate so hard to Momo right now.
These like crisis of confidence that she was having.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's the story of this fight, I think.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, we were talking about it a little before we started recording about like her being part of this, you know, really rich family. She probably has so much pressure and expectations and probably assumed she was, you know, hot to trot, and then Todoroki kind of served her up. It reminds me of when I was in high school. I was a decent high school artist.
Okay.
And in my high school, there was really no competition. I was the only person there capable of drawing. And I went to the Governor's School of New Jersey, and that was the first time I was ever around kids who were like, there were like 10 kids, supposedly the best in the state of New Jersey at that time, for that age group. And they were just, like, amazing. And I'd never been in that situation where I was surrounded by so many people that were so much better than me. And it was just like, oh, my God, I can't do this. You know, I remember I was, like, I called my parents and I was crying and I wanted to leave early and stuff.
Oh, wow.
But I toughed it out.
So you felt, like, out of your depth immediately?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was never in that situation. Imagine going from, like, the best in one place to, like, being in my opinion, the worst in another.
It's the kind of big fish in small pond versus, like, once you're in the big ocean or whatever, it's like,
exactly.
Oh, there's, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I could relate to her in that regard. And also just, you know, everyday life is just, you realize, like, self-doubt is a problem that even people that are really good at what they do have. And yeah. It's just a matter of, like, do you let the self-doubt win or do you kind of push it to the side and just do your best.
Yeah, like, this show does such a good job of, like, all these characters, all these students, and even the villains seem to have, like, they were these three-dimensional characters, and they give them backstories and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's just the Deku and Bakugo and All Might show. Like,
yeah.
All of these characters, even, like, the Grape Kid and stuff, like, we kind of learn their motivations and what's driving
totally.
Them. And then we got whole arcs and stuff that, like, build Todoroki as a character, and All Might's a really fascinating character and stuff like you're talking
yeah.
about with Momo. It's incredible. And they also do them great service with this, like, long-term storytelling,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, like, when Todoroki is trying to kind of get Momo's confidence up in this fight, he tells her that, like, back when they were voting for class president, she only got 2 votes, but he was one of them, and mm-hmm. he always believed in Momo. And she brings up how she was sad that, like, she thought that she disappointed him with her performance when they were on the same cavalry battle team.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, this is stuff from, you know, earlier this season, or, you know, I think maybe the voting might have been, whenever that was early this season, too. But it's like, it's cool to just get those callbacks. It shows that, like, the writers are paying attention to stuff and playing on history.
Totally.
As a wrestling fan, you know, I think a lot about how, like, God damn it, I wish these characters on Raw and SmackDown and everything, like, I wish they played into history more mm-hmm. and didn't just act like history is wiped clean every week or after every pay-per-view.
Totally.
And so seeing a show like this that really cares about their characters and gives them these moments, it pays off. It really
yeah.
means something.
And they're not just, like, relegated to some just broad stereotype or concept, like, oh, this one is the really the one that's full of pride, like Bakugo obviously is, but there's a lot more to him.
Yeah.
And, like, they it's not just skin deep, it's like they really give the characters time to, you know, develop and show their different facets and stuff. It's a really, really well done show.
Yeah, like, and I know I compare this to Dragon Ball Z a lot because it's one of my only, you know, frames of reference for anime. But, and to be fair, maybe some of this stuff is fleshed out more in the original Dragon Ball, which I haven't seen. But as much as I love Dragon Ball Z, characters like Piccolo and Tien and Yamcha and stuff, it's like, okay, yeah, I recognize them, I like them, they're definitely big characters on the show, but, like, I feel like there's not a lot of dimension to them. You know, like, Piccolo's just kind of the guy that used to be a bad guy, now he's on the same team or whatever,
yeah.
and Tien's just kind of there. I think he's kind of a similar situation.
The thing that really bothered me about Dragon Ball was its tendency to just rewrite the rules as it went along. Whatever was convenient for the plot line at the time, the rules kind of bent to that.
Yeah, I feel like if this followed some of the Dragon Ball conventions, I feel like season 2 it could have been like, oh, we need help, but All Might, he can only stay in his form for 3 hours or whatever. Oh, that's okay, put him in this chamber for a little bit, and then he'll be more powerful than ever and won't ever have to, like, go back to the weak version, you know?
If this was Dragon Ball, we would still be in the build-up to the sports festival.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Anyway, so she has a crisis of confidence, but after realizing, like, that they kind of hit a dead end, and after Todoroki kind of boosted her a little bit,
mm-hmm.
she realizes a plan that she has to create this fiber that I guess will, once heated, return to its original form.
Yeah.
So they, like, kind of do a swerve on Aizawa a little bit, and they're running around with these blankets over them, and then when he comes and approaches them, they, like, distract him by throwing the bandages that she created onto him, and then he heats him up, and then they harden, and they essentially trap him.
Yeah, so she makes this cocoon around him that, yeah, the stuff, like, forms this, like, basically, like, impenetrable shell
mm-hmm.
around him and holds him.
Right.
Yeah, it's this weird kind of bamboozling thing they do. It's like a mannequin and a catapult or something that they have underneath this hood that
mm-hmm.
they're disguising themselves with. And it's weird, like, she creates them from, like, she was, like, holding her suit open, and I think you just see it from the back, but it looks like all the scarf stuff is, like, coming out of her boobs or something.
Yeah.
I didn't know exactly what was going on there.
Yeah, it's unclear.
Also, they're doing this all in a gigantic residential area. Like, they make note of the fact that there are, like, people there, and they're doing this there.
Are there actually people, or are these arenas intended to be used for, and they're just supposed to, you know,
maybe just kayfabe. Resembled it. Maybe it's kayfabe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's possible. A couple little notes about Aizawa here. He has made special glasses and eye drops now to help him not blink, because that's when he loses control.
Well, he always had those.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they said something about how he had these special glasses. Oh, he used those in the unforeseen circumstances joint
mm-hmm.
or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's right. Yes, I think that's all I've got for this one. So that's kind of it for this episode. They pass. Todoroki and Momo do. And we start off episode 23 with Yuga, Dick Laser, and Uraraka against 13.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty short one. Uraraka gets kind of sucked into 13 with the like weird vacuum ability.
Well, you're missing a huge point here.
What's that?
Oyama asks her if she likes Deku. Right. And that's she gets so embarrassed and she lets go of the thing she was holding on to.
That's right.
And then so it's kind of like if it was part of his plan, it's a very good plan. Because then she got close to 13 and was able to... I guess, use the martial arts that Gunhead had taught her.
Yeah, Gunhead was teaching all these, like, disarming techniques and knife stuff and everything.
Yeah, so they were able to capture her.
That said, she does seem extremely embarrassed about anyone bringing up her having a crush on Deku.
Yeah, it seems like that's something that will happen at some point, which I'm very excited about.
Yes. So yeah, there's the hand-to-hand stuff. We got a Dick Laser, and then Uraraka handcuffs 13.
I think it's a navel laser, by the way.
Dick Laser's funnier to say, I think, objectively.
I think navel laser is pretty funny,
Navel laser's funny, too, especially when he brings up his tummy hurting if he does it for too long. Yuga's just a hell of a character. He's a character I don't want them to do justice to and give us a whole backstory. I want him to just be this randomly occurring dude staring at the camera with weird hearts around his head, talking about his tummy hurting.
I agree.
And shooting lasers out of his navel. Yes, he's great. Then we got Mina, the devil acid girl, and electric guy Dinky against dog principal Nezu.
Mm-hmm.
So the dog is up in a crane with a thing of tea, and just being a dog got drinking tea in a crane.
Argyle sweater on.
Yes, he's a dapper little dog. We learn about his quirk, which is high specs, and it just sounds like he's an animal, but he has a quirk that makes him smarter than humans.
He's and he harbors a resentment toward humans because I guess he was experimented on.
Yeah.
And Recovery Girl mentions how like it's these types of tests where he finally gets to, release some of that hatred and stuff. So he really revels in it.
Yeah, like taking out this anger in like a safe environment where he's not actually hurting anyone. But he's having a good time with that crane up there, just knocking over this whole city. Like these weird Rube Goldberg things of like he's stationary, but he's like creating chain reactions to seal off escapes and all that stuff. But they wind up losing without ever even seeing.
They don't even see him. They don't make... There's nothing they can do. They're fucked.
They are. So the dog principal wins.
But it's a... I guess it's important to keep in mind, though. I think we learned this at the end of the episode, that the teachers are always leaving them with at least one option to win.
Yeah.
And it's up to them to find it, but they did not.
So. Yeah, they've tried to make it fair. They leave the option open. They weigh themselves down, all that stuff. But the hope is that they will learn something from these.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
We move on to Jiro, who is Earphone Jack, and Mountain Head Guy, which we find out is Koji, which we've always seen Koji around. I don't remember a lot of Koji big moments in the past.
I'm a Koji head.
You're a Koji head? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we learn about Koji here. He's a weird guy. But they're up against the DJ, Present Mike. And Present Mike is... You couldn't be more of a Dreamcast character than Present Mike,
I could totally see him in Space Channel 5.
Or Jet Grind Radio, any number of things. So he is 100% a Dreamcast character who just screams. He does these giant screams that create these shockwaves and everything.
He has this deafening scream that at a certain point makes Jiro's ears bleed.
Yes. There are times when, especially when he was like announcing the sports festival, where I just start laughing out loud at just how like Trey Parker over the top. He's like, it's just like the most like DJ, crazy taxi announcer. Another he is Dreamcast personified.
Yeah.
But we find out that Koji can control animals. But he is freaked the fuck out by an ant pretty early on.
All the animals disappear because they're afraid of the sounds.
Yes.
But the bugs and such are immune because I guess sound doesn't travel underground, but he is definitely afraid of them.
Yeah, and the way they animate that is hilarious. It does the thing that the show does really well, which is like totally change the animation style just to show his face just in complete horror.
Mm-hmm.
But Jiro winds up blowing up a rock to show the bugs underneath it. There's a ton of bugs there. He freaks the fuck out again and runs away. But then he remembers his mother. There's a flashback of his mother being really proud about him getting into UA. And he decides he can't disappoint her. And he just starts talking. And she's like, what the? You can talk? Like, I had no idea. And so he does his thing. And he makes all the bugs kind of burst up and envelop present Mike. And they pass. I thought that was a funny little thing. And also kind of built a little bit of Koji, which he's just kind of been a background guy up until now. Very short one here. We've got Shoji, the six-armed weirdo, and the Invisible Girl against Snipe, who is Cowboy Psycho Mantis.
Yes.
And they win because Shoji does fake surrender from Hitman when Snipe comes up with a gun, and Invisible Girl is naked and comes up and handcuffs him.
And do they kind of suggest that Snipe has like a boner or something like that? Because like he gets really embarrassed. And I guess it's because she was naked, even though you can't see anything.
I assumed it was, if he was embarrassed, it was just because the fight was over so quick.
No, he was embarrassed in like a, oh, I didn't mean anything kind of way.
Oh, weird. I don't think I picked up on that at all.
Yeah.
Oh, odd. Okay. Speaking of people getting weird boners, the next one is Grape Kid and Tape Kid against Miss Midnight. And boy, Grape Kid... We talked about Miss Midnight being a fox earlier, and Grape Kid would agree with you.
Yeah. Midnight takes out Tape Hero Sero immediately with her somnambulist gas.
Yeah, where she has to, like, break her suit open and make the pink gas come out or whatever.
I think it's technically a fragrance.
Oh, okay.
That she emits.
It's like a perfume.
Yeah.
And so when Grape Kid sees this, he just sprints away crying blood.
Yeah, he's wants to get away from her, but he's also incredibly jealous of Sero because she is kind of cradling him in her arms as he's sleeping.
Yeah, but we get like a close-up of like Tape Kid's head falling asleep like against her just like giant boobs. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So Manita is not happy about that, but he runs away like a coward, or so we think.
Yeah, we learn here that he is not just a weird horny guy with grapes on his head. He did actually want to become a real hero, I guess for the end goal of girls liking him.
Yeah,
so,
which is, as they say, a totally valid goal.
Sure. He's a lonely little grape man, and he just wants to be cradled against a boob while he's been put to sleep against his will. But yeah, he seems to have all sorts of fantasies here, because there's a part where Miss Midnight is like charging through the sleep mist with a whip, and he is just ready to go, it seems. Like, he just cannot handle what's happening in his body or brain right now.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, what's going to happen in this scene here? But then he puts on a face mask to kind of counteract her
made
business.
Made out of Sarah's tape.
Oh, I don't think I caught that. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I don't think they would be able to, like, use a foreign object.
Oh,
or
bring
something.
Stuff in. Yeah. And he charges her and throws a ton of grapes at her. And we see a grape rush graphic. Mm-hmm. It says the words grape rush on the screen and just sticks her all up there. And so Grape Kid grabs the Tape Kid and they get the hell out of there.
Well, he doesn't grab. Does he grab the Tape Kid? I think he just escapes by himself because the Tape Kid does fail. So it makes me think that he didn't go through. But I could be wrong.
Maybe they said something about how, like, since Tape Kid didn't really contribute or something, he didn't count as winning. I don't know. I wrote down he grabs Tape Kid. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, maybe he did.
And then we get a tease here that the next episode is going to be Deku and Bakugo versus All Might. And so they're kind of talking things out. And Bakugo totally wants to KO All Might.
Let me just say, this episode is probably one of my favorites. It was so good.
It's a hell of an episode, and it really kind of plays on three major characters and the relationships between them. Mm-hmm. I thought it was fantastic. So yeah, Bakugo wants to just knock him the fuck out, and not satisfied with anything but head-on combat. And him and Deku are just instantly not getting along, not agreeing on tactics or anything
Deku
like that.
Yeah, Deku thinks the best tactic would be to try to make the escape because there's no way they could go against All Might. Bakugo wants to fight him.
Right. And Bakugo is saying stuff like, you know, I'd rather lose than get help from you. And at one point, Deku punches Bakugo in the face and says, don't let me hear you say you'd rather lose. Mm-hmm. So they're just really kind of trying to, like, smack some sense into each other and get on the same page. But All Might is just telling him, like, hey, treat me like a villain right now. I'm not going to pull any punches.
Oh, my God. And All Might is just bonkers strong. Like, his debut in the match is just, like, lets out this cyclone. I think he does, like, the Texas Smash thing or whatever. And this cyclone just demolishes an entire street.
Yeah.
And then he approaches them from the mist. And they're both freaking out because it's, like, this teacher that they love and respect, All Might, looks so fucking scary right now.
Yeah. And he's, like, he's not going to be holding back against them.
Yeah. And it just reminded me, like, I mean, obviously these students are very strong, but compared to not only a pro, but the number one hero, like, they're just nothing.
Yeah, and he's weighed down at this point, too. Yeah. And so he, like, palms Bakugo in the face, and then Bakugo's just going nuts with a bunch of, like, tiny little explosions, and All Might's just no-selling everything. Mm-hmm. Just does not matter at all. Just slams Bakugo just headfirst into the dirt. But yeah, they kind of get away, and they go to this alley, and they're arguing about the approach and everything. And Bakugo is like, we got to do damage here. Like, he gives him one of his grenade hands, basically. So, like, let's just, you know, lay into him here. But they come to a compromise where they want to do fighting and running, basically. And they almost get to the gate at one point when All Might shows up and just shatters the grenade arms. So, like, that whole plan is out the window immediately. And he's just fucking them up. He's, like, grabbing one of them, and they're hitting them with each other and smacking them around, stomping on them, just pissing Bakugo off.
Right.
There's one part where he's got Bakugo on the ground, and Bakugo is just furious about how this is going and just sends this giant explosion up. Like, I love it when Bakugo gets super mad and just, like, lets out this fury in the form of explosions, you know? But they point out how, like, he doesn't have his gauntlets, like the grenade gauntlets. Like, those, I guess, protected him or throttled it. And so now it's actually less safe because there's nothing kind of holding that back, and he can do damage to himself. Yeah, Bakugo tosses Deku and tries to, like, blast him towards the gate, but All Might intercepts him. A lot of back and forth here to where, like, Deku and Bakugo are both getting seriously hurt here. Deku's back is in a bad way. Bakugo's arms are all hurt after all these blasts. And then I think it's Deku that kind of turns the tide here, right? And he dashes at All Might and, like, smiles and just nails him in the face, right?
Yeah, Bakugo is, like, out of commission at that point.
Right, right. And that's when Deku just kind of, he does one of those cool All Might things, or all for one, or, I'm sorry, one for all charges where he punches him. And then he grabs Bakugo and runs for the gate. And there's a cool moment here, I think, where All Might is reflecting on how Deku will always charge headfirst into danger to protect people, even people that he doesn't like. Which, there's flashbacks to, like, one of the first episodes where there was that garbage monster that grabbed Bakugo.
Right.
And, like, that's a great defining characteristic of Deku, I think, is that, like, he's not in this for his own good. He's not in this for any glory or anything. Like, he just genuinely wants to help people, regardless.
And I think it really highlights, too, reminds us how, like, all the, not pressure, but, like, there's a ton of weight on Deku's shoulders in terms of living up to this power. I mean, because we just witnessed what All Might is capable of, and even in a restrained way. And, like, the fact that Deku at some point will have to kind of embody that himself as the number one hero, which I assume he will be at a certain point. It just reminds us, like, everything he has to learn and all the time he has to grow and all the shit that he's going to have to do to get there. But I'm really excited about watching more of this.
Yeah, and all this kind of fell into Deku's lap in a way because he was not prepared. Like, I think he wanted to be a hero. He obviously did. He'd watch his videos and cry and everything. But this whole All Might thing and One for All, like, I don't think he was prepared for this level of responsibility and pressure and everything. Like, he just happened to meet his hero, and his hero was like, eat my hair and take my power.
Well, I mean, it's after All Might recognized that he has this certain will that not a lot of people have.
That's right. That was after the garbage monster thing, right? So it wasn't just random. All Might was like, this kid's got something. Like, he's a worthy heir to this power.
Yeah, and Deku wanted to be a hero even though he didn't have a quirk in the beginning. Remember, that's what he asked All Might, like, if I'm quirkless, can it
That's right. And All Might mentioned that he used to be quirkless, which now we know kind of the backstory on that and how he became All Might. And, man, this show, it's really, really good.
It is a very good show.
I know we say it all the time, but talking about it makes me just think about how incredibly well they do this. But, yeah, Deku and Bakugo win. And at the end of the episode, we get a very quick thing of Temura and the Warp Gate guy at their weird villain bar. And so Girin, who is this, like, just general
bad
guy.
He's like a recruiter for the League of Villains.
Yeah, just shady character who basically brings in the guy with the weird half bottom of his face and the girl that was kind of skipping around the warehouse.
Dobby is the half face guy and Toga is the girl.
Yes. And at the beginning of this last episode of the season, we learn a little bit more about them. So Toga, the girl, is a suspect in a series of deaths. And so I think they're kind of building her up as like, oh, she's unhinged. She's crazy. I hope it's not like a Harley Quinn type character because I hate that character. But,
no, she doesn't strike me as a Harley Quinn type character. She's like a creepy little girl who looks innocent and sweet, but is like
murderous.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they went into her quirk in the show, but I can tell you what it is because I looked it up if you want to know.
Hmm. I'm curious. Go ahead. Let's go ahead. Let's do season three.
So she can transform or shape shift into anyone's appearance by drinking their blood.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So another one of those quirks that's like, well, if you have this quirk, you're probably going to be a villain.
Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to get a whole bunch of like, oh, is that the real Todoroki or whatever? Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. That's always a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy, Dobby, is, it just seems like he's a follower of Stain's ideology.
Yes.
It seems like he's been watching a bunch of recommended videos on YouTube and went down a rabbit hole. And now he just is a follower of Stain, basically.
And Tamura doesn't really like that they're so into Stain. Because he obviously didn't like Stain very much. And, well, not that this episode doesn't have a ton going on, except the kids go to a shopping mall to prepare for their summer training camp, which they all get to go to even if they failed.
Yeah.
And at the mall, Tamura, like, kind of holds Deku hostage, and he asks Deku, essentially, what does Stain have that I don't have?
Yeah.
And Deku answers him honestly and, like, unwittingly, like, ends up giving him the conviction that he needs to then become even a greater threat.
Yeah.
By telling him essentially that, like, Stain has these clear-cut, this ideology, this reason that drives him. He's not just, like, aimlessly evil.
Yeah, he says he doesn't destroy things just because they're fun, you know?
Right. And in Stain's mind and in Deku's mind, All Might is the ultimate hero. So by that, Tamura recognizes that, like, oh, his conviction will be to destroy All Might.
Yeah, it's like, okay, if that's the enemy of both the people I don't like, then I guess he's my enemy.
Right.
I thought this was a really cool scene because the way he's holding Deku hostage, like, it's in the middle of this crowded shopping mall, and he's wearing a hoodie, he doesn't have his hands on his face or anything, he just looks like a weird, creepy kid, and he puts his fingers around Deku's neck, and he's like, hey, you know my quirk, if I touch my fifth finger here, your throat is going to disintegrate, you're just going to die here painfully. But yeah, this whole talk, it goes on for a while, just about how he hates Stain more than anything. That, like, why did Stain get all this attention when I had these cool Nomu creatures flying around? And I think that was a really cool tease of the next season of, like, I assume that's going to be the main through line, is Tamura hates All Might, wants to kill him. I'm sure Stain is going to come into play because he's not dead. He was just put in jail.
I'm sure All For One will... Yes. Come into play as well.
Which we do see, actually a little bit, let me see if there's anything of note here. Oh, Ochako, or Uraraka comes up at one point and it's like, oh, is this a friend of yours or whatever? And realizes something weird's going on and the cops get called. But Tamura gets away. And they interview Deku. Oh yeah, his mom shows up with a cop cat. Have we seen the cop cat before?
No, I think it's just random cop cat.
Okay, so we had a cop cat. And then, yeah, All For One, we do get a little tease after the credits. We see him kind of. I think we see the bottom part of his face. It looks very evil. I can't remember if there were, like, tubes attached to him or something.
I mean, there's a lot of tubular stuff in a very dark room, and he's a breathy antagonist.
Yeah, so. It's some real, like, Dr. Claw stuff, like, sitting in this evil lab type thing. Talking about how he's preparing his successor, and we see kind of like a brain sticking out of a pool.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's going to be like a Nomu type thing.
No, he says specifically that Tamura is going to be his successor.
What's the brain in the pool?
Well, maybe he'll give Tamura the brain. I don't know. But like Tamura is to All For One as Deku is to One For All.
Oh, cool. This is like some Metal Gear shit. Like training the next... Oh, man. Yeah, I thought this was an extremely effective end of the season and a great season overall. I think there was some stuff in the middle. Like, it's a much longer season, so there's more setting up it does than the first season. Like, I think in the Stain stuff around the middle, I don't think it dragged, but I think it was more establishing than, like, you know, being climactic in its own right, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a through line to the whole season, being this, like, looming threat of the League of Villains, but it was kind of separated into a bunch of smaller conflicts, from the sports festival to the internships, the final exams. Like, it was nicely done. I think the pace was a lot faster than the first season. Obviously, there was more here. There was just more episodes, I think, right?
Yeah.
But it just makes me really excited to watch the third season.
Yeah, I think they did an awesome job of, like, that first arc of the sports festival. I thought was incredible. I mm-hmm. loved the sports festival. And then we do a little bit of Stain stuff. We do a little bit of intern stuff. And then we end with another big, like, set of exams and then a tease for the next season. I mm-hmm. think it was super effective.
Yeah, it was cool.
Makes me even more into the show. I think Todoroki was kind of the star of this season in my mind because of that stuff earlier on. But yeah, I'm super excited to see season three. We haven't really talked about when we're going to do that yet, but man, I really do want to watch that show.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it a lot. We also have the Two Heroes movie on Blu-ray, which, I think that takes place before season three in the timeline. So I don't think that's a streaming thing. So I don't know if we'll cover that necessarily, or maybe we'll mention it once we get to season three. We'll see. We will get there. But for now, We want to thank everyone who listens to this podcast, who downloads it, who subscribes to it, and especially those who help us out through listener support. That is a thing where if you go to panningthestream.com, you can click support this podcast, and you can help us out at $1, $5, or $10 a month. Help keep the lights on here. You can also do a one-time thing and just cancel afterwards. But thanks so much. It really has been. It means a lot. We don't have a ton of supporters, being kind of a little mom-pa operation here, but we got enough to occasionally shine a light on folks when they sign up. And I think do we have a new one this week?
We sure do.
We do. Do you have a Bonku?
Yes, for this new supporter?
All right.
Dalton, if you're out there listening, I want to say thanks. And my thanks takes the form of this Bonku. Despite the guy's name, he is not a sad trucker. He's cool guy Dalton.
Sad trucker?
Yeah, doesn't Dalton like sound like a loner trucker?
I bet there's a sad trucker named Dalton, but it's not this guy.
Spends his life on the road, just lugging stuff from one place to another.
I can see that. I hope that is not Dalton's profession. Otherwise, he's going to feel like you just made fun of him. But I think you just praised him.
Well, I mean, he's not a sad trucker. Maybe he's a happy trucker.
That's true. That's true.
Nothing against truckers. I think for some reason, trucking to me seems like a weirdly romantic, not in the sense of romance, but like romantic kind of adventure.
Yeah. Just the open road.
Career, yeah.
You and your thoughts in the road. Yeah, totally. So, trucker or no, or happy or sad, Dalton, I hope you enjoyed the Bonku made, especially for you. Also for you, suggestions for you, the viewer. Bonk, do you have a suggestion for anyone at home this week?
I do, Daniel.
All right.
Well, I don't know when you, listener, are listening to this podcast, but right now it's summertime, and that means mangoes are in season. And I strongly suggest eating mangoes. And this is how you do it. A lot of people are intimidated by mangoes because they don't know how to cut them. But what I do, and I don't know if this is the official way, but I peel the skin off and then I just cut around the seed. I mean, there's no reason to cut the skin off. You're probably losing a lot of mango in that process. Just do it with a peeler and cut those slices off, put a little salt on them. You should, when you're mango shopping, squeeze the mangoes a little bit. If there's a little bit of give, that's a desirable mango. If there's no give, it's probably going to be very tart. If it's too soft, it's way overripe and going to be kind of gross, in my opinion.
So a little bit soft, but you want to eat it right away, right?
Yeah.
Or soon?
Not even soft, just a little bit of give.
A little bit of give.
It can still be firm, yeah.
Okay. All right. That's some prime mango tips for the folks at home.
Yeah, well, there you go.
My suggestion would be specifically for anyone who ever enjoyed the show Deadwood back in the day. And specifically if you watch the show, because I think it would be hard to watch if you were not familiar with the characters or anything. But Deadwood was an excellent HBO show that had an untimely end after 3 seasons, and there was lots of talk over the years about the movie or another season happening, and no one really thought it was going to happen, but it did. You've probably seen ads for it if you have HBO Go or anything. But A, watch it if you've seen Deadwood before. Mm-hmm. And B, if you've not watched Deadwood, I think that show holds up really well. It's very dialogue heavy. Don't expect it to be a rootin' tootin' shoot 'em up western.
Yeah, it holds up because it was set in like the late 1800s.
Yeah, like after the Civil War, kind of like, you know, before South Dakota was a state and everything. Mm-hmm. Just the characters are extremely well written, great dialogue, and like the actors are amazing. This is like
poetic
the Ian McShane
dialogue.
Yeah, this is like the Ian McShane role, and he's one of my favorites. But I thought this movie was a really nice bit of closure for fans of the series that I don't think we expected to get. It was very true to all the characters, and I really, really enjoyed it as a fan of the show.
Yeah,
so,
it was nice.
Yeah, if you got HBO, check out Deadwood the movie. But that'll be it for this week here on Panning the Stream. Thanks to you, the listener at home. Thanks to you, Bonk, for sitting across the table from me. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song that you
thanks,
should be hearing
bro.
Right now. And we will see you all next week.
Bye.